how would you possibly sum up CES, you know, just as a trade show in general?
It is a great time because you're around people who truly understand you, who are very, very passionate about retail.
How do you even come out of a show like CES and gauge success?
I will tell you that I feel incredibly proud of the work that went into this CES. And I think our members, when they look at what the team produced coming out of CES, will agree with us.
Somehow, some way, I managed to survive another CES out there in Las Vegas. And that right there was the voice of Lee McDonald, the director of consumer electronics for Nationwide Marketing Group. And Lee was nice enough to invite me out in this new role here as corporate communications manager for Nationwide. Wasn't sure if I'd get the chance to go back to CES, but Lee, I guess, knows my history in CE and how near and dear a show like CES is to me, and gave me the chance to go out there and cover the show for Nationwide, and said he wanted to recap the show afterwards, wanted to get on a podcast and talk about what he saw and what we saw and kind of get everything out there and talk about it. So that's what we're doing. And this is something that I think, you know, we plan on turning into a regular series of sorts as part of the Independent Thinking Podcast. Lee and myself, Rob Stott, host of this podcast, planning on talking about consumer electronics, maybe a monthly, we're talking about monthly, probably just about that often, getting on a podcast and giving some updates on consumer electronics, talking about some retail trends in this space, maybe some vendor updates, some vendor member interviews, and just having some fun with this. So a nice way to stay connected for me to the CE space and also, you know, share some great news and info with members. So this first one, like I mentioned, is Lee and I coming off of CES 2020 and highlighting some of the trends we saw. You know, lots to talk about coming out of CES, lots of, you know, smart home news, 5G, 8K, so many buzzy tech words to dive into that, you know, we can spend hours talking about, but somehow manage to cram into just about 30 minutes. So you know, plenty to get to, stuff you'll see at primetime. If you're listening to this after primetime, stuff that you probably did see at primetime. So some programs that were negotiated out there in Vegas in the desert that made their way to Houston, and all that good stuff. So really no reason to delay anymore and really just dive into this conversation with Lee McDonald and talk about CES 2020. So we are just back from CES 2020, my fifth year, I think it is now, going in a row to CES, and in a different bit of a capacity this time, you know, as corporate communications manager for Nationwide Marketing Group. And I have Lee McDonald to thank. Lee is here on the Independent Thinking Podcast today and my guest, and I have you to thank for getting me out to CES. So first of all, just I thank you.
Yeah, are you sure you want to thank me for it?
Right. Well, here's this. I got to go to CES and I didn't have to write 700 articles in 5 days. So thank you for the lightened workload, if that makes sense, okay. Out in Vegas. So
yeah, I would just wait till next year.
Maybe I should have held my cards there for, you know, no pun intended, speaking about Vegas and CES, but no, I truly mean it when I say thank you for letting me go back out there and experiencing that show. So I know you guys had a crazy schedule, but before we dive into, you know, what CES was like for Nationwide, how, you know, you as an attendee of that show, in what way would you possibly sum up CES, you know, just as a trade show in general?
Oh, wow. A great question. So Hank Alexander, who runs our custom install channel, he posted something on LinkedIn. I think he called it the world's largest party, you know, with 175,000 of your friends. And I will tell you, after doing 40 meetings in 3 days, it doesn't feel like a party, but it is a great time because you're around people who truly understand you, and that's not understand me, because I don't think that's possible, but who are very, very passionate about retail. Which is really hard. I always struggle when people ask me, you know, what do you do for a living? Tell me about your job. It's really unique. I usually end up just saying I work in retail, but I've always, you know, been a believer that if you work in retail long enough, it's because you have to be a little crazy. You either get into retail and you absolutely love it and you never do anything else, or you bounce out of it really quickly because it's just incredibly crazy. So I love CES because you're around the same type of people that are just a little bit crazy as you are. And you can see, you know, about 9 o'clock at night, exactly how that crazy manifests itself. So I love it. You know, as a trade show, CES is an opportunity to connect with a lot of people you don't get a chance to see throughout the year, whether that's vendors. You know, for us specifically, it's members. We get to see a lot of members. So this year, you know, we host our member cocktail hour. So it was incredible to see how many of our members actually do come to CES. I think sometimes we in the group are quick to you know, say that, you know, appliances and furniture and bedding are the lion's share of the group. And those are certainly important parts of it. And those are, yes, definitely bigger, but there's a shocking number of members who are still in the consumer electronics space. And what I guess surprised me the most, who are really interested in getting into it. We had a number of members come who weren't in the CE space and now coming out of it, you know, we're starting to put together programs and formulate ways to get them, you know, to be able to take advantage of some of the stuff that we've announced, the Google program, our LG program, Samsung, and a few of the different vendors. So for me, a long-winded way to say CES is one of my favorite times of the year, and it's where I feel like I'm not the odd duck.
No, that certainly makes sense, and I can definitely relate to that feeling about it. And if you're looking for, like, cliche, I know you said Hank called it a party. It feels sort of that Vegas cliche of you could more relate it to maybe like a 15-round Mayweather fight, you know, back in his heyday. And by the end of CES, you feel like you went all 15 rounds with Mayweather. And, you know, just getting meeting after meeting after meeting is like gut shot, headshot, uppercut. And then by the end of the show, you're just gassed. And then you have to recover for that next week. And I know that's certainly something that I think everyone can kind of attest to, having attended CES and sort of the beast that it is as a trade show. But what, you know, looking at the tech itself, there's some crazy stuff this year. I mean, I don't know about you, but I came across a Charmin robot that delivered toilet paper to you if you ran out. You know, there was a Sony unveiled a car, more foldable phones and laptops and stuff like that, that, you know, you could dive into and see that were just off the chains. But what was the craziest piece of tech that you saw at CES?
Yeah, there were a lot of interesting things this year, I think more so than the past years that I've been. And I haven't been going to CES that long. I think this is only my 10th year going. And, you know, there's a lot of people on our team that have been going a lot longer. For me, I would say the one that I thought was the coolest, just because I think of its real world potential and impact, was the that smart AI project from Samsung. I think it was called Neon.
Yeah,
where they had the digital assistants where it looked like you were talking to a doctor and they could help do your medical diagnosis. Then you learn that that's not a real person.
It's a little creepy.
Yeah, it's creepy. It was. It definitely felt, it had that uncanny valley type feeling to it, you know, like Westworld. But that was incredible to me, because you start thinking about people who don't have access to healthcare or don't have access to, you know, different things that can be delivered through a digital platform. That was really, really interesting to see how well Samsung pulled it off. There were a few other ones too. The Segway S Pod. I don't know if you saw that thing.
It looked like something. It reminded me of, what's the like Wall-E, where the people on the floating pods all around. You know, just pure laziness at its finest.
I know we have truly jumped the shark now. So I don't know if that's art imitating life or life imitating art, but that was, I just kind of shook my head at that one. It was interesting. I did like the Charmin, the TP bot.
Yeah.
Not sure what they officially call that one.
Yeah, but that sounds like if they don't have a name, that sounds like a good one.
So sure, maybe I should go out and trademark that. But it's always interesting. You know, I think what I walk away from at CES is every vendor, every manufacturer rather, has a really cool story to tell. I mean, you think about Neon, and you would never think that that was Samsung. I remember when I was walking by, I was like, who is this? You know, whose booth is this? Neon, who's Neon? And then you learn it's Samsung. That's pretty incredible. And if you look at what Samsung spends and all the other manufacturers spend on research and development, it really shouldn't come as a surprise. But then you see something like that, and you're like, holy cow, this is way different than anything out there. And I think that really benefits retail, and specifically independent retail, because there's a lot of stories that these manufacturers have to tell. And I'm, you know, the saying around the office is these stories, whether it's a connected home or Google or how these things all interact together, is not going to be sold by someone working at a lumber yard.
Heck
It's
yeah.
going to be controlled by a, you know, a highly trained, most likely commissioned sales associate who is a professional pursuing a career versus someone just working at a job. So every time I go to CES, I'm always encouraged that the more complicated these stories get, the better it is for independent retail.
Heck yeah. And that's kind of a easy segue into a shameless plug for me, but a podcast that we just put, or a blog rather, that I just posted kind of wrapping up CES. And you talk about the opportunity for retailers, particularly at a show like that. You know, it's educating customers and on all these products that are coming out. So yeah, you know, the manufacturers, they clearly get very jazzed and excited about the things that they're able to show at a show like CES. But you know, I find a lot of the times, and I just in the last couple of years going to CES, that you know they're more about pushing out buzzwords and things that are catchy, like faster and lower latency. I'm thinking, you know, those words apply to something like 5G, but you know, then it falls on the retailers because consumers are still left confused. Like, okay, slow, faster, lower latency, like that sounds great, but what's it all mean and how's it apply to me? And that's where the retailer comes in, or at least has the opportunity to come in and kind of be that trusted source for the customer that comes into their store looking for these products. So whether they like it or not, they're sort of that front line of defense, or even, you know, you could look at it as offense if you're going out trying to get customers, and explaining these technologies to them is a very real thing for retail.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I get a lot of questions from members. How do you be successful in the CE business, and how do you drive more market awareness? And a lot of times where I find that members ask, I would say probably the most similar, or what the lowest common denominator, what they all struggle with, is just, what do you do once you actually get someone who's interested in buying consumer electronics in your store? And to your point, it's really about translating, you know, what we used to call speeds and feeds, contrast ratio, refresh rate, all those things that are nonsensical, into what is the value and the impact on this customer's life? You know, why do you care about 60 hertz versus 120? Why is 8K important? Is 8K important? These are all really important questions that I think consumers are going to start asking next year. And that's the value of independent retail. And that's really the difference between good and what I, you know, and great. You know, the difference between good and great is someone walking into your store, okay, well, this is the, you know, this is the latest we have, this is 8K, it's a great picture, you know, how would you like to pay for it? Versus someone coming in and having the experience of like, hey, I know you're not looking for it, but you just have to see this. This is really cool. And then showing someone, you know, what we used to call an unqualified demo, whether that's 8K, whether that's, you know, Samsung's Q Symphony, where the soundbar works with the TV speakers, and really showing, okay, well, you know, I don't really care that a TV and a soundbar talk to each other until you sit down and you demonstrate the value for me as a consumer. Like, oh, you know, when you hear an airplane kind of flying over behind it, Mach 1, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. I get that.
Oh, that's awesome. No, and absolutely makes sense. So, and all of this, though, kind of revolves around this idea of us being at CES and seeing what's going on and what's coming and being able to relay that message. So kind of, you know, segueing into, we've been talking generally about CES, but let's talk a little bit more about Nationwide. And, you know, I think this would have been your first show as director of CE at CES, correct?
Yeah. Crazy to think, but
yeah, right.
I think officially took over in September, and then it was really, really quick, you know, prime time, and then CES. So yeah,
that's awesome. So when you look at the show, the CES, I know there was a lot of, you know, talk up leading up to the show about what we were doing, but you know, when you're out there as Nationwide, what's the goal? You know, pretend you're talking to a member about why we go to CES. What's your stated goal to that member about what Nationwide's doing in Vegas at CES, and what really, what's your point of being there?
Yeah, it's really simple. And if you listen to Tom, who's, you know, everybody knows our president, chief member advocate, our job really boils down to two things. We either give members back time, or we, you know, we help them make more money. So I look at everything I do, whether it's trade show attendance or, you know, meetings with vendors, but how am I giving back time to members, or how am I giving them money? So I look at, you know, CES, how do I drive a more meaningful experience for our members through their vendor relations? So are there people with our members that I need to connect to our vendor partners at Samsung, LG, Google, Nest, you know, whoever they need to be? Or how do I develop more meaningful programs to help them make more money on the products they sell. I mean, consumer electronics, let's face it, is not the most margin-rich category, at least not as much as it used to be. So that's why things like our Google Prime Retail program that'll help members make, you know, more than 20 points of margin on a category that's typically had low single-digit margin is so beneficial. So if you ask me, like, what I think of when I go to CES, I'm always looking for ways, you know, if I were a member, if I were running a member store, what are the things that I always hear them, you know, struggle with? It's manpower, it's labor, which there's not a ton of help for them at CES, although we've got some really cool solutions this year that we might be hearing about in the future. But a lot of times with consumer electronics specifically, it's, you know, how do I make more margin? How do I compete against big box? How do I drive a unique value story, where I'm 30 miles outside of a major metropolitan area? So I that's the lens I really try to approach it with.
And now then, from that regard, you know, looking here a week or 2 weeks after the show, looking back on how it went, I mean, with those goals in mind, do you think this year was a success, or how do you even come out of a show like CES and gauge success?
It's really hard to quantify success coming out of CES. Excuse me. I will tell you that I feel incredibly proud of the work that went into this CES and some of the early things that we've got coming out of it. So, you know, I've kind of hinted, and I'm sure you've done a little bit of work about the Google Prime Retail program. Probably seen that in the news. That's a game changer for nationwide members. That's a group exclusive, and they'll be able to hear more about it at Prime Time. Like I said, that's a major, major margin enhancement that's exclusive to our members, that actually makes that category viable. Even if you're a furniture dealer, even if you're an appliance dealer, that's a really, really big deal for our membership. It helps them, you know, lay that foundation for how do you connect appliances and furniture and bedding and CE and tell that story. And, you know, kudos to Hank Alexander for getting that program off the ground and running. He did an incredible job with it. So that's one thing I'm incredibly excited about. The other part is we had a number of meetings with our distribution partners. You know, with 5,500 members, not everybody is going to have the ability to have a direct one-on-one relationship with vendors, nor do they really want that. They may not have the time to do that. They may not have the staff to do that. So having a strong and robust network of distribution partners is critical for Nationwide. And I will tell you, we walked away from that meeting with some really, really interesting things. Unfortunately, can't really share yet, but we'll see them at Prime Time. You know, better programs, access to additional product lines from major manufacturers that will have some really, really deep cuts into cashback specials. You know, think about an audio brand that you may or may not know that we just picked up having 60 points of margin at Prime Time. That's just, you know, 60 points for a major category like audio is a little unheard of. So I look at CES as an absolute win. And I think our members, when they look at what the team produced coming out of CES, will agree with us.
That's awesome. And one thing in there that, you know, I heard that kind of sticks with me and is actually a nice sort of way to transition to the next question about trends here is that, you know, you're talking about a program like the Google Nest Prime Retail program. And certainly, I hope everyone at this point has heard a little bit about that program, having pushed out the press release and gotten some awesome coverage on it. So, you know, to that end and to that extent and to that program, you know, you talk about the trends of something like the connected home. And I know we've already hit on a couple others as far as 8K and 5G. But what, you know, were some of the big trends walking around the floor this year as you're talking to these vendors and just, you know, roaming the show floor yourself? What were the trends that you spotted that you think stand out and can make an impact in our member stores?
Yeah, I think it's interesting too, because I want to start just quickly saying part of the reason that I wanted to do this podcast is not because I love my own voice, although I think a lot of people tell you, especially my wife, that that's the case. But, you know, again, with 5,500 members, it would be, I just don't believe that they have the time to go out and read all the news and digest it. And what my hope is that you and I, by talking about things that are relevant, what happened this month and how it relates to our members, is that they get at least a small part of what I've been so incredibly blessed with, which is the knowledge and the ability to work in consumer electronics. And if that makes, you know, one of them smarter, then I'll be more than happy to talk into a big microphone for the rest of my life. But, you know, as it relates to, you know, trends are coming out, you know, it's interesting. I read a really good article on Engadget. I would encourage everybody to head over to Engadget and look at what their article on 8K wrote, because they gave two contrasting opinions. One was, you know, specifically as it relates to 8K, 8K, you know, there's no content. It's not real technology. The TVs are super expensive. But then their counterpoint, I can't remember who wrote it, was actually incredibly well written. And the point is, you know, all these technologies that come out, it's not because that Samsung or LG or Sharp believe that, you know, 8K is going to be 30% market share in the first year it's released. No, it's really about showing consumers what's kind of ahead of the curve, you know, what's just around the corner. And a lot of that technology will actually trickle down. So, you know, 8K may not be as hot of a commodity as everybody wants to think of it this year, but the technologies that under, you know, that are underneath that, call it veneer, are really critical, you know, whether that's, you know, as it relates to contrast ratio, HDR, some of the other things that go into it, like 5G. I know we'll get talked about 5G in a second, but a lot of that stuff will eventually trickle down into TVs this year. So I you know, I don't think 8K is going to be, you know, probably double digit market share until 2022 or maybe, you know, very late 2021 at the earliest. But, I think a lot of technology that's in there will make it to TVs, you know, either this year or next year.
Yeah, and the other cool thing too about it, you know, you hit on all the right points there that article brings up, and was able to find it here sitting here, is that, you know, yeah, content doesn't exist yet, and I even have some of my own qualms about, you know, jumping into the 8K game this early, but at the same time, you talk about some of the other technologies that 8K is kind of showcasing right now. You know, I think back to when 4K came out, and you know, brands tried to show off this upscaling technology from 1080p to 4K on these TVs that were roughly about the same size. You know, yeah. And it didn't really have that big of an impact. But, you know, you walk onto the CES show floor and you see an 8K TV, 98 inches, that's upscaling, you know, 4K, even 1080p content that you were looking at on a 32-inch TV. That has some impact. So, I mean, it's clear that the difference, you know, when you're talking about something, I think it's like 33 million pixels inside these frames, as opposed to, you know, what, you know, 1080 and even 4K, it's not double the size. What people, I think, need to understand is 8K is four times the size of 4K as far as pixel density. So, I mean, this technology, it's not there as far as content's concerned, but there's so many other positives about it and just advancements in the video game, or I should say the video industry, the video space, as opposed to the last jump from 1080 to 4K. So it's impressive, even though, you know, it feels like it's ahead of its time right now.
Yeah, you know, and I'm stumbling with my words here. So I wrote an article for Independent Thinking, which is our, you know, our nationwide magazine. And you know, a lot of that is also about being a destination for consumers when they shop. If you just show the, you know, every day in, day out, same TVs that they can see at Best Buy, it's the same shopping experience they get at a national retailer, you're not doing your business a service. And, you know, I worked for a retailer in Colorado that was lucky enough to be a destination retailer. I mean, we had a big building, an empty parking lot in the middle of nowhere in terms of retail. Like, there was nothing next to us. There was no furniture, no restaurants. I think we had a Popeye's chicken across the street. That was pretty much where everybody ate. But, you know, what we did have is we had $20,000 TVs. We had a $50,000 audio room. I will never forget the first audio demo I had in my life. And it was one of the first experiences where I knew I was hooked, is that they were showing a demo from, Minority Report with Tom Cruise, and there's a scene in there where they go through an Audi factory, this futuristic Audi factory, and they have these air cannons that they shoot to try to catch Tom Cruise because he's running away. And they had these massive 15-inch subwoofers that probably, you know, were powered by a small nuclear reactor. And when they shot those guns, it like reverberated with your chest, took your breath away. And that is about being a destination retailer, and that's really where I want to help our members, is to figure out how do they become in their market a destination retailer. And specifically, that's how 8K can help these folks, because yeah, they may not buy a $25,000 to $30,000 television, but with the display allowances and the programs that our vendors put together, it is very reasonable to try to get one of those sets in your store. And how awesome would it be in your community that you are now the focal point for 8K and all this emerging technology? And then it allows you to have a conversation about a TV that, you know, maybe, you know, they would end up purchasing. So that when I look at that technology, you know, I know one of the questions you asked me is, how does that excite me? Because I think our members have an incredible opportunity to become a destination for these next generation technologies that are out there at CES.
Absolutely. And you talk about becoming a destination, my mind immediately goes to specifically, and not to, you know, praise one particular vendor, but LG, their booth every year is a destination booth, mainly because they are that first entrance. And when you're in Central Hall, or you know, the Central Hall area, you go immediately into the LG booth when you walk into the convention center there at CES, but they've got the waves, the bendable, the curved LEDs that are there. But then also you get inside the booth, and I'm thinking, you know, something that could translate directly to a retailer store, and you see inside that booth the OLEDR, which for those who don't know is that rollable TV that LG has, that it's a whole display at CES, but I can just imagine in a retail store one of those being enough to cause a stir in a community, to get people to come look at a TV that can literally, you know, unroll itself out of a box and then fold itself right back up when you're not using it.
Yeah, and if you know, just think tactically for a minute, I hate to take the podcast to talk about sales tactics, but you're absolutely right, because if someone walks in, that's what I was mentioning about unqualified demo. Like, yeah, look, I know you're here for the $499, you know, trunk slammer special, but look, buy that TV, that's great, but you got to check this out. This is the coolest thing ever. You put that TV, you know, press that button, and the TV rolls down, and they will lose their mind, and then they see how thin it is, and it's literally a piece of paper. You know, that maybe you can have to start having a conversation like, well, hey, did you know that, for example, LG is going to release a 48-inch OLED this year? And by the way, it's only about $200 or $300 more than the set you were looking at. Look at this incredible difference in picture quality and this technology that's in the rollable, you know, kind of trickles down to there. And that's where I think that our members and independent retail as a whole will win versus the big box stores. Because if you go and you secret shop them, which I do every weekend, you know, my wife hates me, but they just do not connect on the technology story. They get it right every now and then, but it's just not there. And I think that's one of our biggest opportunities as a group.
So not just skipping right ahead, but, you know, we've got a couple other technologies to talk about. And I know one of them we've hinted at already, but 5G, there's a lot we can talk about here. You know, maybe suffice its own podcast eventually in the future here. But what did you guys see from the 5G standpoint that, you know, could maybe tie into some of the things we got, some of the programs we have going on with AT&T and what our members can look for there?
Yeah, that was another one that's, you know, 5G is a lot like 8K to me, where it's incredibly confusing. And I don't think the underlying technology is not confusing, don't get me wrong. I think it's just everybody has a different idea of what 5K, 5G. Now I'm getting
yeah, right.
Everybody has a different idea of what 5G means for them and what it means to their life. And, you know, I think a lot of people just gravitate naturally towards 5G being, you know, the next kind of thing for cell phones, which it is. But it's also a massive, massive area of opportunity for medical and healthcare, because as you decrease latency and you know, lag, I guess if there's any gamers out there listening to this, that, you know, you're able to do more complex surgery and remote surgery. So I think that was actually one of the first use cases of 5G, as they did, you know, it was a small cell and not very far away from the actual surgeon, but they did a, you know, like a remote test. I think it was like an egg or something. It wasn't a live human, God forbid. but it was, you know, that's one of them. And I was actually listening to Glenn Lurie, who used to be, I think it was AT&T. But he said that 5G is really the first technology that was purpose developed, meaning, you know, 3G, 2G, 3G, 4G, we're all about, hey, let's do more with less, let's have a faster speed. 5G, I guess, is, in his opinion, and I think I actually agree with him, is the first where everybody kind of took a step back and said, okay, but what are we using it for? What can we use it for? What are the use cases? Almost imagine, this is crazy, but imagine that before we did 8K, all of the major studios, all the major TV networks, and all the major providers, everybody, all the content creators got together and they said, okay, what does 8K look like? Let's create a bunch of content for it before we create the standard. And I feel like that is what started with 5G, but there's just a lot of information out there about 5G and what it means for people. There's different types of 5G and different flavors, so it's really confusing. And I think it's unfortunate, but where I believe the technology will go is I think it will be pervasive. I think in about 2 to 3 years, we're going to see it in phones. I certainly think we'll see it in TV. We'll see it in streaming boxes. I think we'll start seeing a subset of, you know, Apple TVs. I don't know Apple, but specifically, but those network streaming devices that don't have Wi-Fi in them, or have Wi-Fi but are supplemented through a 5G chip. It's harder to think about the things that 5G will not impact than it is to tell you all the things that I think will, you know, have a 5G chip in them.
Yeah, and you know, the thing my mind goes to when I think about the low latency, and I, you know, this isn't necessarily a retail thing per se, but The thing that excites me about low latency and 5G is what it could do to the autonomous vehicle space, and the importance might not be more understated about low latency than on, you know, smart cars or driverless cars, because you think about the sensors and how quickly they need to. You're driving down a highway, 65, you know, going the speed limit, right? 65, 70 miles an hour in an autonomous car, on a driverless car, and you need those sensors to click and work as quick as possible, because, you know, a split second in some instances, especially on the road, is a matter of life and death. So, I mean, being able to brake or accelerate and realize what's happening around you, that's the kind of thing that having low latency and fast speeds and 5G in general is capable of doing. So, definitely a lot of industries and a lot of spaces in technology that I know that 5G will impact. So one in particular as well, smart home. And I know, yeah, you know, we've already hinted at Google Nest and some of the things that are happening there with Nationwide, but you know, what else did you see from the smart home space? Did you guys get a chance to walk around the sands a little bit?
No. like I said, we were really literally back to back to meetings, as you mentioned earlier. Yep. It was my first time in this role. So I thought it was really important to make sure that I had a lot of face time with our partners, both on the vendor side and the member side. So unfortunately, that kind of kept me off the floor. But some of our team did go. Henry Farley, who works on our team, on the merchandising team, he got a chance to go and, you know, sent back some reports on some really interesting technology and stuff that was out there. But I was reading one article about someone from the Shark Tank. I think it was one of their producers that essentially just walks down that lower level of the sands.
Oh, yeah.
And almost hands out a lifeline to some of these distributors. And I actually spent a lot of time on the manufacturer side developing new products in the consumer electronics space. And I've never exhibited down in that sands. I have exhibited in the sands upstairs next to the Fitbit booth. But, you know, that's going to be a wild, wild experience. Because some of those folks, if they didn't get, you know, a sponsorship or placement at CES, they go out of business.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's Eureka Park. I know that's that area in the basement right underneath the convention center. That they literally pack it with companies. I mean, there's probably more companies in that space than, you know, you could combine the amount of companies in the convention center. I think they give them like 6-foot tables, some of them, and just say, hey, do what you want with the space and make it work for you. And yep, they literally pack it in, but that's where some of the brightest ideas, and you mentioned guys, you know, people from Shark Tank walking around down there, not surprising, because just some of the futuristic stuff that you could come across down there, I know, is really off the charts. But, you know, thinking about coming out of CES now, you're through it. we made it. We're out the other side. I know. A couple of colds, I know, on the opposite end of CES, but, you know, that's to be expected. But we survived. thinking of how it went and how, you know, anything you would have done differently looking back at the CES, or that, you know, having been in this role now for this CES, what you would like to do next year?
I don't think I would have scheduled meetings at 6 a.m. no, in all seriousness, I don't know that I would change a lot. I'm really excited for the way it turned out. Incredibly proud of the effort the team put into to pull it off. It is no small feat, scheduling that many meetings across that many locations and coordinating travel, and it's a lot to take on, and I'm, you know, very thankful that I work with people that are much smarter, better looking, and well organized than I am. I think the one thing I would tell you that I'm looking forward to next year is just seeing more of our members there. Again, as we started this podcast off, I was overwhelmed with the response. We had never done a member reception at Consumer Electronics Show before, and so when we threw it out there, I was really nervous. We only may have, you know, 5-10 people there, but I think at the end we had over 100.
Wow!
So that tells me that this group in consumer electronics is incredibly alive, incredibly strong, and that there is a significant amount of just pent up interest and excitement about the category as a whole. I didn't have anybody call me after the show, member wise, saying, it was a waste of time. I didn't really get anything out of it. In fact, I had the opposite. I had people calling me, you know, thank you for dragging me to CES. You know, I saw a lot of really cool things that some of our members hadn't been there 4 or 5 years. And they're already, you know, I'm already getting RSVPs for our travel for next year. So I think that's what I would do differently, is just you know, make it more about the membership and focus on those folks first.
Well, I already know that I plan on getting an earlier flight next year so that I can be at that reception, because it sounds like it was an absolute blast. And, you know, I know I got in, I took a couple hours late, but, you know, it's that's one change I'll have to make to the itinerary looking at CES 2021. So,
yeah, it's, you know, the great thing is it's really low key. We just, you know, for everybody listening, if you couldn't join, it was just a bunch of people that love independent retail that were sitting around in Vegas having a, you know, maybe a cocktail or two or whatever your adult beverage of choice was. It wasn't some, you know, we didn't go bowling, we didn't do anything crazy, but it's a way for us to get together and share ideas. And that was really humbling for me to be around people that were that successful and wanted to stay in the CE business.
That's awesome. And I know that momentum will certainly carry forward. We got, you know, I believe by the time this publishes, you know, you may be at prime time listening to this or, you know, ahead of it, but, you know, certainly hoping that momentum carries right through to prime time, and beyond and into CES 2021, like I mentioned. So, Lee, I appreciate you taking the time and kind of recapping CES. And you mentioned it, you know, we didn't get to talk about it at the top, but this is something that I know we want to start doing regularly, podcasts about the CE channel, and certainly something I'm looking forward to, as it's a space that's near and dear to me, kind of where I come from, where I was born in this this industry and covering independent retail. So talking about CE is something I enjoy, and I think we'll have a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, let's just be real. We have 5,500 members that rely on us to deliver them, and, you know, a lot of value and a lot of knowledge. There's just too many folks to go around. I wish I could call 5,500 people every month. So what I hope is that this turns into, you know, we have members on, we talk about their successes, things they're seeing in the industry, as well as, you know, if anyone has questions, send them to Rob, send them to me, and we'll be happy to talk about it on air. You know, it could be anything from how do I find, you know, CE salespeople, or how do I, you know, enhance the margin on a program, or make sure I'm taking advantage of trailing credits, or how do I get access to XYZ line? That's what this is for. This is for our membership. So if you got those questions, send them in. We're more than happy to talk about it.
Awesome. And certainly, like Lee said, you know, send it to him, to me. We'll be sure to get it on air, talk to you, talk about some of these topics, and look forward to continuing to cover it. But again, Lee, thank you. And, you know, we will catch up at primetime.
That's right. See you in 30 days.
Awesome. And like Lee mentioned there, you know, something that we look forward to is regularly talking about updates in the consumer tech space and what Nationwide has going on from a CE standpoint, not just CES related, but, you know, throughout the year. And just about once a month, we'll get together and chat about some news and some other things going on in the consumer tech space for Nationwide Marketing Group. So again, a big thanks to Lee for, again, inviting me out to CES and then also, you know, spending a few minutes with me post show here to wrap up what we saw and some of the big trends and whatnot that we are continuing to follow, you know, in the weeks and months here after the show. So again, as always, appreciate you taking the time to listen, and we will catch you on the next Independent Thinking podcast.